Hi, and welcome to the Nutrition and Learning Podcast. This is the fourth podcast, called A Keith Review, where I lift the roof off my learning about nutrition and try and give some insights not only about what I'm learning, but also how. For more information, you can visit www.seriouslyfunfood.com, where you can sign up for the newsletter. And if you want more, you can actually register to get some free guides and take a free course on learning about nutrition. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter if you want to follow. Well, these last few weeks, I've been looking at diets. So many people ask which one works, do any of them work, are they a waste of time? So I decided to try and find out for myself. As usual with a Keith Review, I will tell you what I did, what I learnt, what further actions or ideas came out of that, and finally, what reflections I now have about my learning and identity. So let me begin with what I did. Three main things. Firstly, I did some research on the concept of diet. Secondly, I researched some more of the well-known diets, many of them called fad diets, just so that I could know what they were all about and what all the fuss is about. Thirdly, well, I came across the non-diet approach. Inevitably, I guess, looking back. And so I ended up listening to a few podcasts on this topic. Two in particular stand out. One is the Nutrition Matters podcast, run by Paige Smathers. And she looked at the slippery slope of wellness culture. Brilliant, well worth listening. Another one was by Heather Kaplan, another registered dietitian. Her site and podcast explores intuitive eating in quite a bit of detail, and she has a great podcast series, 10 episodes, all free, about intuitive eating. I think she has an online course there as well. Her show is called Real Talk, and it really is very down to earth, very real, direct, and refreshing too. So, secondly, what I learnt. I learnt an awful lot, and I tried to categorise maybe four areas. The first was learning what different people mean by diet. You know, one man's diet is another man's lifestyle. Secondly, I learned quite a bit about the concept of thin and healthy. You know, the opposite of fat and unhealthy. Because I always assumed fat equals unhealthy, because that's consistently the message you get on most health websites. But it seems all is not what it seems. Thirdly, I learned a lot about different types of diet, really the good, the bad, and the ugly. I learned about diet and religion, diet and disease, fad diets, and what you could call debunked diets. Fourthly, I learned something interesting, which is to sell a diet, you need to know what drives people to go on a diet. And what I realized is the main driver often might not be better health. So let me kick off with the first one there. What different people mean by diet? Well, I started, as you might imagine, with Wikipedia, definition of diet. And there are two main definitions. The first one is interesting because it says a diet... definition. The kinds of food that a person, animal, or community habitually eats. For example, a vegetarian diet. It's your habitual eating, what you eat all the time. So in fact, in that sense, we're all on a diet. Second meaning, though, is a special course of food to which a person restricts themselves, either to lose weight or for medical reasons. Example, I'm going on a diet. It clearly suggests it's temporary, idea of restriction, and interesting, the motive to lose weight or medical reasons. I unearthed a lot more of that later. So that's what the dictionary says. But when you talk to people, you know, people talk about diets, they talk about fad diets, and they talk about lifestyles, all sorts of interesting words pop up. Well, it seems a while back, when diets were all the rage, yeah, even more than now, that a lot of research evidence, scientific evidence, began to emerge saying that diets don't work, especially in the long term. Basic problem that they were not sustainable. So people would go back, well, would give up and end up putting on more weight. What happened when that research came out, of course, is that many people promoting diets started to reframe their approach, distancing themselves from diets, inverted commas, saying it was more of a lifestyle change or something similar. Strangely enough, many people said that what they weren't promoting wasn't a diet, even if it had the word diet in its name. There was a great example, I don't know if you've heard or remember, the Pioppi diet. And the authors claim on their website it's a lifestyle, not a diet, despite it having diet in the name. It was a funny one because it looks very similar to me to the Mediterranean diet, but it avoids refined carbs and sugar. So refined carbs, things like pasta, rice, bread. It's named after a small fishing village in Italy, where apparently people lived until they were 100. I tell you what, they must have found the only village in Italy where pasta is not a staple part of the diet. And I wonder if the fact that the people who lived there, this small fishing village, lived until they were 100 because they were fishermen, as well as the diet. Anyway, after that, the term fad diet became so popular that, of course, many people avoided diet, the word diet. People were making the word fad and diet synonymous, because it obviously, well... Anyway, Joe Leach, he has a very interesting article, and I'll leave the link in the show notes, on why the paleo diet is dead and keto is the new diet of 2018. I think it's interesting because the very nature of the terms he uses show that these are probably fad diets, right? The crazes that come in or go out of fashion. Although I know many people who would disagree with that. However, in a way, to be honest, I think the noise about fad diets not working, the kind of fudging of whether a diet is a diet or a lifestyle change, it's a bit of a lexical red herring, I think. Surely it's just playing with words. Okay, fad diets tend to refer to restrictive diets, and these are seen by many as not working due to the challenge of sustaining it. But when governments propose, as many around the world do, a balanced diet, now isn't that a diet too? I mean, there's a clue in the title, right? So I just wonder if it's not all semantics, it's just a language issue. Maybe a marketing one, too, noted, but more language than nutrition. I guess it doesn't really matter what we call these things, so long as they work. Well, maybe it doesn't matter too much. Maybe it matters a little bit, and I'm going to come back to that a little bit later. The second thing I learned was about the concept of thin and healthy. Most diets, right, are about losing weight. So is the issue then to lose weight or to be healthy? And is losing weight the same as healthy? That was my question. Also, is obesity the main issue when it comes to health? I know it leads to, well, sorry, is associated with many diseases, such as heart disease and diabetes. But does being thin automatically mean you are healthy? Well, I started my search, as you might have guessed, on Google. If you Google this phrase, is thin healthy? See how many results there are. There are loads. It becomes clear that you can be skinny and unhealthy if you are not leading a healthy lifestyle. So eating the wrong food, not doing any exercise and so on. Kind of logical, I guess. You see, it seems that people store fat differently, and thin people, apparently, can still have what they call belly fat. But it's not just about fat. It turns out there is something called metabolically fit or metabolically healthy. And no matter what your weight is, you may or may not be metabolically fit. Now, what does that mean? Well, the main indicators are your levels of insulin resistance, your levels of HDL, that's the good cholesterol, levels of triglycerides, and blood pressure. research, and this is observational, so it's just showing associations, it's not conclusive, has shown overweight and obese people are not at a greater risk of heart disease, so long as they are metabolically fit. However, yeah, just as you get to the top of one hill, the summit of another rises just behind you. A more recent study published in the European Heart Journal questions this concept and actually suggests that when we look at long-term effects over more than 10 years, overweight and obese people do face higher risk of cardiovascular disease because they tend to lose their metabolic fitness as they grow older. Not because they're not fit, but because over 10 years they tend to lose the metabolic fitness. Ah, as with all things, it's never simple. On social media in particular, I've seen a lot of kickback from people about demonizing and shaming fat people through photos in particular, and basically making them feel bad about their bodies. This, as you can imagine, only makes things worse. There is a movement, if that's the right word, or community maybe, I've discovered, well, read about, called the HAES, Health at Every Size, and it strives to support people of all sizes to manage their health. It goes against the narrative that fat people are unhealthy and lazy and have little willpower and so on and so forth. It's fascinating. It's great. I've got lots of questions around it. There is an awful lot to unpack there, an awful lot for me to learn. I'm tempted actually to do a separate podcast on that one alone. But there are some interesting resources worth looking out. The HAES community website, books and videos by Linda Bacon. There is a dietitian in Australia, Nina Mills, who has the What's for Eats website. And most of these look at different approaches to health that are not based on restrictive diet in the sense of dieting to lose weight. Intuitive eating, permission to eat, listening to your body are some of the themes that come out of this approach. They all make sense to me. And, well, if you haven't explored this concept yet or come across it, I recommend that you do. Again, the links given earlier to intuitive eating might be a good place to start. Now, so I've done number one, what I learned, number two, what I learned, number three, what I learned was about different types of diet, including diet and religion, diet and disease, fad diets and debunked diets. Now, when I started here looking at these, I went onto a search engine to look for diets, and the number of diets out there is amazing. It's crazy. You've got health diets, low carbohydrate, low fat, veganism, DASH diet, raw foodism, vegetarianism, paleolithic, low sodium, gluten-free, zone diet, whole 30 diet, calorie restriction, pescatarian, sugar busters, kosher food, halal, master cleanse, juice fasting, cotton ball diet, vegetarian cuisine, morning banana diet. Hello? Rice diet, KE diet, high diet, the hacker's diet, the tongue patch diet, seriously? It goes on and on. There are hundreds of diets out there. Let me look first then at these categories. Let's look at belief-based or diet and religion. Some religions state that certain foods are to be avoided in their diet. For example, many Hindus will not eat meat from the cow. Sorry, obviously, as the cow is considered a sacred animal. I think it's seen as a maternal symbol as it provides life-sustaining milk. Islam has the concept of halal food, which is permitted, whilst the opposite is haram, which the Quran says you must avoid. That includes pork and alcohol and any meat from an animal not killed according to Islamic methods of ritual slaughter. Similarly, for Jews, they have kosher food, which includes not only the food, but the place and style of preparation, which makes the food, according to religious beliefs, suitable to eat. Non-kosher includes pork. Those are three. I mean, I have never been fully comfortable with dealing with these in the sense, I mean, of cooking and preparing for people following these religions and basically from a place of ignorance. Even though I've read about them, I find it difficult until I've actually experienced them firsthand. It's totally my fault. It lies with me. For example, I wasn't clear at all what really counted as a vegetarian until I had Buddhist friends in China. Likewise, I got a better understanding of halal when I lived in Malaysia. And I found it's not just about knowing the rule, but also understanding the reasons behind them is important. And as with all cultural relations, it can help build respect and understanding. So that was my first category. My second category was medical-based or disease-based diets. These are diets that tend to be recommended to control certain diseases, although there seems to be much debate about to what extent diet actually can prevent, reduce, control, or even reverse disease. For example, right, you could put the whole plant-based diet in this category. As you might imagine, it has a wonderful acronym, the WPBD, as, for example, promoted by Dr. Colin Campbell in his China study. And this claims to be associated with lower risk of breast, prostate, and large bowel cancer, as well as being able to reverse heart disease and obesity. The idea is to eat whole, unrefined plants. So, for example, it's based on beans, lentils, and legumes, starchy vegetables like your sweet potato, all other vegetables and fruits, but it excludes or minimizes meat, fish, dairy products, and eggs. The key, of course, as always, is that the science around this, especially the China study, is based on associations rather than cause. The China study was a snapshot in time of diet and disease in 6,500 people across rural and semi-rural China. It's difficult to prove diet directly causes disease with that kind of study, as impressive as it is. But Dr. Campbell does narrate a good and convincing story of the associations, showing actually that diet can reverse heart disease. And as a minimum, it can influence various cancers. It's a fascinating read. He throws in his own personal anecdote that he changed his own diet because of the evidence as he saw it through the study. In this group, there is the DASH, which stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension. These are diets often recommended to people who want to prevent or treat hypertension, i.e. high blood pressure. And so reduce their risk of heart disease and stroke. It's also a diet that focuses on vegetables, fruits, whole grains, and lean meats. The diet particularly is low in red meat, salt, added sugars, and fat. The latter, one assumes, are those that cause high blood pressure. And one more here is the gluten-free diet. Glutton or gluten, I'm not quite sure where you would pronounce that. Potato, potato. This is a diet which avoids the protein gluten, which is often found in barley, rye, and wheat. It's a diet that is a medical treatment for gluten-related disorders, such as celiac disease. It took me ages to work out the pronunciation of this word, C-O-E-L-I-A-C. I apologize, I even had to look it up. And wheat allergy. What's interesting, though, I think about this, is that now you've got so many people without celiac disease who are following gluten-free diets. And of course, the food marketing world is responding in abundance. Going to any supermarket today, gluten-free is all over the place. Many people argue that people don't need to follow these diets, especially if you don't have that medical condition. It's just an overreaction to the food industry marketing, to the internet diet guru promotion. The Mayo or the Mayo Clinic, I'm having a ball with pronunciation today, the mayonnaise Mayo Clinic website warns that whilst there is evidence of benefits for celiac sufferers, there is little research evidence on benefits for those without a gluten-related medical condition to avoid gluten. And what's more, this diet seriously changes your nutritional intake, in particular for fiber, vitamins and other nutrients. So it needs to be very well planned. The messaging seems to be that if you don't have a gluten-related disorder or disease, don't go on a gluten-free diet. Next up is diets for weight loss. And I've just got a couple here. I guess all diets are about weight loss in some way or another, but I'm just going to look at two that are, I guess, very popular or well known. The first is, of course, Weight Watchers. This is a lifestyle, not a diet, we are told on their website, and it's based on tracking calories, so you know what and how much you are eating. They use something called Smart Points to make this all really easy, whereby Smart Points are one easy to use number that you track, and the number is based on calories, saturated fat, sugar and protein. Makes it super simple. Simplicity and practicality over accuracy, hey, but why not? Their mission is to inspire healthy habits for real life. Sounds good. There seems to be a strong sense of community there on their website too. This is one of the older, I think, older diets. I remember my mother used to follow this diet years ago, and they're still going. Next one is intermittent fasting. And this is more about when you eat rather than what you eat. And there seems to be here different approaches, such as having a 16-hour fast, which usually involves skipping breakfast, or just fasting for 24 hours twice a week, or using what they call the 5-2 method of fasting 48 hours in a row. So you've got 5 days of eating and 2 days off. Naturally, if you eat less, you will lose weight, right? Although it does seem that hormonal changes help you burn fat more quickly. With intermittent fasting, there is very little research on this. And the research that is out there is usually small, short, and often based on animals. However, I know from personal experience and colleagues at work that the simplicity attracts a lot of people. And if you keep at it, it does seem to be a very good way of losing weight. Now, my next category is, well, I was going to call it fad diets, but I've changed it to popular diets because I'm forever the diplomat. Popular diets, I'll kick off with the low carb or low carbohydrate diets, of which there are quite a few. These generally promote a diet reduced in carbohydrates as found in grains. So think your bread, pasta, rice, as found in starchy vegetables. And that's generally those grown below the ground. So think of potatoes, sweet potatoes and carrots, and fruit. Now, if you don't eat all of those, you have to make up for those, i.e. you have to get your calories from somewhere else, and though that usually comes from foods high in protein and high in fat. Different diets take these to different extremes. These diets are hugely popular for weight loss, and I think because of the following. Basically, high levels of carbohydrates are broken down in our body into simple sugar, i.e. glucose, which is used up for energy. But if it's not all used up for energy, it gets stored as fat. So low levels of carbohydrates means less glucose for energy, lower levels of insulin, and so your body starts burning fat to get its energy. Thus, you lose weight. Some of the more popular ones, you'll remember the Atkins diet, Dukan diet, South Beach diet, the Paleo-Paleolithic diet, the Acronomistic LCHF, low-carb, high-fat diet, the keto or the ketogenic diet. Interesting variation here. The keto is based on the idea of putting your body into a state of ketosis, where the liver produces ketones from fat. And so the body essentially switches to burning fat as its source of energy. I have read some dietitians warning that in the short term this is okay, but should not be followed long term. However, there are advocates on your Instagram account who say you can follow this strictly restrictive diet long term, in fact, as long as you want. So maybe the jury's out.